Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast.
In the air, center field. Rojas going back near the wall. The ball's gone! Cooper Hummel! 1-0 Astros! Breaks the pitcher's duel here in the eighth.
How about it, Cooper Hummel? Got that Oppo-type juice going the other way.
Ha! It seemed like Blum wanted to say Oppo Taco there, but I wonder if he's been getting any heat from people saying Oppo Taco sounds a little weird.
But Oppo Taco's become just standard terminology. It's not like one of his cute little words or
anything. Sounded like he paused, though, right before. He's like, kind of Oppo-type stuff going on right there.
Maybe he came up with a pun because he loves his little catchphrases and puns and everything for players. Maybe he's been workshopping something for Cole. For Hummel, and he didn't really didn't feel comfortable with it yet.
Maybe. Yeah. He just
bailed out of the triple Lindy.
Yeah.
Because he just like, all right, no, I'm going to hit the water hard. I got to
get back in the weight room. I got to figure this thing out.
Yeah.
That was Todd Callis and Jeff Blum on the call, Space City Home Network. Cooper Hummel with a home run last night. That was the only run of the game that you heard right there. And the Astros find a way to win again, 1-0. Framber Valdez, excellent last night, 7 shutout innings. A little shaky early. But 92 pitches over 7 innings, pretty economical. No runs, that's the most important thing. And the Astros continue to get contributions by up and down the line. Not last night so much, they only scored 1 run. But on the aggregate here, especially in the month of June, contributions up and down the lineup. Here's Joe Espada on Cooper Hummel, Mauricio Dubon, and others.
I don't think we're gauging anything. We are getting ready to play whoever we play. It's exciting when first place teams come in here. You feel the fan. You feel like it's kind of a playoff atmosphere. But we're just getting ready to play whoever.
Yeah, Espada's doing a great job, man. He is doing an excellent
really
job.
He really is, and it's also, I mean, last year I thought he was getting a lot of criticism for things that were beyond his control during the first half of the season or the first third of a season when things were really bad.
Yeah.
You can't blame Espada for the pitchers being as bad in 2024 as they were to start the season. That this year you can see, man, for whatever you have a quibble with them about lineups or what have you, they just flat out keep winning baseball games where they have – they have no business winning these games if you just look at it on paper.
Yeah.
They've done a great job managing all of this.
And I think he maybe waited a little too long to move Christian Walker down in the lineup. I thought he maybe gave him a little too much rope, but moving Jeremy Peña to the leadoff spot has been one of the best moves made by an Astros manager relative to the lineup over the last several years. I mean, that's turned Peña into an elite all-star caliber offensive player at shortstop.
It was, last year part of it, though, too, was you had the combined aspect of Beltran playing, Jose Abreu playing as bad as he was, and then watching the manager get up and talk about him in gushing terms.
Yeah.
And it was hard. That was hard as the team also wasn't having success. Then this year you don't have any awkward situations like that. It doesn't feel like there's anybody shoehorned onto this team.
No. Like Christian Walker hasn't played well, but I think people understand why he's playing every day, he's in the lineup. Like, I get it. We just need him to play better. So Espada, I think, man, has done a great job. I need to see some Manager of the Year odds come out here and see what the betting community thinks. We talked a lot yesterday about Jeremy Peña signing with Scott Boras and kind of sifting through the history, at least a couple chapters with Scott Boras that we've had to deal with. Now, the Jose Altuve one has worked out very well. Jose Altuve will be a lifetime Astro. Scott Boras is his agent. Others, it's not worked out quite as well. Matt Young had the list of recent Boras clients that the Astros have done business with, and it's really interesting, and I'm curious where we think Peña ends up falling on the scale of these guys. The first one on the list is Carlos Beltran,
okay,
who was a Boras client back the first go-around with the Astros, and it turned into one of the most acrimonious relationships between the fans, the team itself and a former player, maybe the most that we've seen in the history of the team.
I think for all of the guff that Boris gets, I think a lot of it is misplaced because ultimately he's just, he's like a divorce. He's like your wife leaving you and she hires a good divorce attorney. Yeah, you're going to be mad at the divorce attorney, but he's just doing his job. It's your wife who decided to leave you. With Boris, the Carlos Beltran scenario is the one where I look at it and it just feels like, oh, you shady agent.
Yeah.
Well, oh, wait a second. You strung the Astros along, and then all of a sudden he's gone anyway. If Beltran was traded for in the middle of that season, if he had just left at the end, by and large, people wouldn't have been mad at Beltran. It was the way he went about it and doing it in alliance with Scott Boris. That's what I think really cemented Boris being the big B word in their minds.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. The article reminds us that Drayton McClain, at the time the owner of the Astros, said he wouldn't do business with any more Scott Boris clients. That's a dicey thing. You're not going to have a very good baseball team if you go anti-Boris, full anti-Boris.
Such a behind-the-scenes type of deal maker and being able to engineer where guys go, you have to.
Yeah, I don't think we'll end up feeling as a fan base the same way about Jeremy Peña as we did about the Carlos Beltran situation. The Astros themselves and Astro fans felt duped and lied to in that whole thing. Jose Altuve, we talked about Alex Bregman, Boris, a Bregman client.
Altuve, to point out that Altuve signed two extensions with Boris as his client.
Yeah, yeah.
Except the more every time an Astros player now signs with Scott Boris and then leaves in free agency, it's getting harder and harder for me to point out to everybody, hey, remember Altuve?
Yeah.
Altuve is a Boris client. He signed an extension. It's becoming conspicuous by how Altuve's and McCullers also, but mostly Altuve is the guy that you really wanted who did sign an extension.
Yeah, Altuve will always illustrate the point that you make, Seth, and that we make, which is the agent works for the player. The fact of the matter is, most players are just as greedy as the agents are. Like, that's the thing. It's, you know, a lot of people position it as a Boris thing. And Boris may very well recommend to his clients that they hit free agency because that's where you're going to get the most money.
Yeah.
But the players are just as greedy as the agent. And I'm not saying that with any level of disdain. Like, you should be. Like, you should try to get as much as you possibly
greedy
can.
In a classic American type of way. Not bad greedy. Just, you know, enough greediness.
Enough greedy. Yeah, yeah. Correa was a Boris agent. I had forgotten about this, though. He hired Boris during the lockout. Remember, Carlos had like a Hollywood agency handling his stuff until he hit free agency, the lockout hit, and then he switched to Boris as his agent, and then the lockout ended, and Boris came back, got him that original 3-year deal with the opt-out with the Twins, got him a couple massive deals with the Giants and the Mets that both got squashed because of medicals, and then I thought went back and got him a pretty good deal for someone who just got rejected by two MLB teams because of a leg issue. He got 6 years, $200 million that he's not lived up to at all in Minnesota so far.
Right,
By Boris.
Yeah, and as much as the people in Minneapolis despise you, Sean Pendergast, because of your antics at Twins games, it would be interesting to listen in and see how they feel about Carlos Correa. Because Carlos, it was basically like, hey, I'm back. I love Minnesota.
Right.
After two other teams rejected me. They can't have felt awesome about that to begin with. And then he hasn't held up his end of the bargain.
They don't operate on the same budget that even a team like the Astros operates on. So I think people maybe forgot or blocked out this one. I know I had. Gerrit Cole, not just a Scott Boris client, but was actually wearing Scott Boris gear on his head after Game 7 of the World Series in 2019.
As
a representative of himself.
In which he actually, you know, he made sure to point out as he did, was about to do the interview, that he wasn't actually an Astros employee
right,
anymore.
Right, not anymore.
Thank you. I cannot distance myself from this failure as much as possible, yes.
Oh, my God. There's some other ones on here that are fun. Yusei Kikuchi, we don't need to dig too deep on that. He was a Boris client. Boris got him a lot of money from the Angels. This offseason. He was Mark Appel. Remember Mark Appel, the first pick in the draft back in 2013?
Oh, yeah.
He barely made it to the big leagues. He was a Boris client. You mentioned McCullers. Dallas Keuchel is an interesting one because Dallas Keuchel was great as an Astro. He was one of the faces of the first Astro World Series championship team.
Integral part in bringing in Justin Verlander.
A huge part, yeah. He sold Justin Verlander on coming to Houston during Hurricane Harvey. And then, I don't know who gets the finger pointed at him for how it worked out for Keuchel in free agency, but he got almost no interest in free agency coming out of the 2018 season into 2019 to where he had to sign a one-year prove-it deal with the Braves in June. Yeah. And then he ultimately got a three-year pretty good deal from the White Sox, and then ultimately that was kind of his demise. He's been in and out of the major leagues since then, but I would say for Scott Boras, like, he probably doesn't present Dallas. If he's trying to sell somebody on signing with him to be their agent, I'm guessing there's not a Dallas Keuchel slide on the PowerPoint, probably.
Keuchel's an interesting one just because I think one of the values of having a guy like Scott Boras as your agent is that, in theory, he should be pretty informed on exactly what's going to be out there for you. Like, what are the numbers that teams are willing to pay? Boras has a pretty good feel and or inside intel on a lot of that. And with Keuchel, I wonder just what did he told Keuchel? Yeah. Like, oh, no, you're about to get the big money?
Yeah.
Or did Keuchel have a realistic idea of what it was? Or did it, because, I mean, that was pretty much the interest level in Dallas Keuchel from that point forward was about that same level.
Yeah.
Nobody was desperate to have him on their team.
There was definitely a disconnect somewhere. You don't sign in June if there's not a disconnect somewhere.
Well, part of it, I mean, they raised the strike zone a couple inches, and that was where Keuchel lived, was at the bottom of the strike zone. So they kind of squeezed him out just by virtue of the way they called the strikes.
And he was a year removed from being great when he hit free agency. He was great in 20. He was obviously great the year he won the Cy Young in 2015. He was great again in 2017. He made the All-Star team and was obviously part of that rotation that won the World Series. And then in 2018, which may have been about the time they did with what the, you know, they raised the strike zone, like you said, Seth. I think he was 14-13 that year. He had a kind of a middling ERA. Like, he was fine. He was an innings eater for a team that made a play. You know, made it to the ALCS that year. But he was not the same Keuchel that he'd been in his two fantastic seasons that he'd had a couple of years before that. And then Marwin Gonzalez was a Boras client. It got him to cash in on – nobody cashed in bigger on the trash can scandal than Marwin Gonzalez. 90 RBIs in 2017. All the splits say that he was a completely different player that year with the trash cans than any other year. Signs a two-year, $20 million deal with the Twins and then falls off the map.
He should be working for the CIA.
Yeah.
Because he was, and all the really in-depth breakdowns they did, the hardcore statistical analysis, it was Marwin and one other player, I can't remember who it was. There were only two guys where it looked like it actually benefited them.
Yeah.
By the end of when they were doing it, it was actually harming a lot of guys because they were leaning too much into it or they'd form tendencies. So, but Marwin, good for you, Marwin. A man, a perfect place, perfect time.
I don't know that Pena's journey to free agency looks like any of these guys. Like, you know, Bregman and Correa got three-year short-term deals. I think Pena, if he plays like this at a premium position, still at age 30, I think he's going to get, you know, he could get a 6 or 7 year deal, something like that. I don't think he's going to get tippy top of the market. Like, Gerrit Cole is still the highest paid pitcher in baseball. 5 years later, nobody's got more money than Gerrit Cole as a pitcher. I don't think he's that. And I certainly don't think he's any of these guys that only got, like, you know, like Marwin or Dallas Keuchel. Pena might be the first guy that Boras has with the – well, and Carlos Beltran got a big, nice long-term deal, but I don't think there's going to be the acrimony that there was with Carlos Beltran. Pena may be the first guy that leaves here as a Boras client and actually gets the conventional – contract that he's expecting to get in free agency.
There's a bunch of really good shortstops this year in Major League Baseball all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And Pena's amongst the very best of them. But that, like, depending on what the market is when he hits free agency or when he has that leverage, that'd be interesting.
Yep. Sure will.
What about Kyle? Can we look in on Kyle Tucker a little bit and dream about what he might or might not
Here's do? John Heyman of MLB.com or MLB TV. He talked about this earlier this week, Kyle Tucker's future, what the market's looking like for Kyle Tucker.
He's not a pitcher. There's no risk. He was a number 5 overall pick. He's made a lot of money. He is one of the most, if not the most, consistent hitter in baseball. So it's going to be very difficult. But the Cubs are, you know, it's a big market team. They're doing very well. They need to give it a try. That said, once the guy's a free agent, he's only been there a year. There are going to be other teams in there. Never count the San Francisco Giants at this point. They look like an aggressive team, as we've seen. And the Red Sox. Now, the Red Sox have a lot of outfielders, but we've heard of Durant potentially on the market. They would be a possibility as well because they do need to do something to make up for Devin.
That would be amazing. If Kyle Tucker ended up signing a big deal with the Red Sox and they still suck the same way Bregman's having to experience right now, that would be fun.
I mean, the whole – with the Cubs, it's important to remember as we prepare for a series against the Cubs, the NL Central is really, really tight right now.
Yeah.
They've got three teams between 44 and 46 wins. The Cubs have 46 wins, and then the Brewers and the Cardinals both have 44 wins. The Reds are 42 and 38. So that's
that's stout.
You know, The standard for a Cubs fan, I would imagine, is, man, you better make a really serious World Series push here if you're only going to give us Kyle Tucker for 1 year.
Yep.
And then Cam Smith and Paredes are playing the way they're playing. If they could sweep this. That's all I ask. I just want them to sweep
You want them to sweep the team that's in first place in the hardest division in baseball.
I want them to knock the Cubs down into fourth place in the division.
Yeah.
And at the same time, that's not quite possible. Third place in the division.
Okay.
And then I also want that. Well, it could be possible by the time they play. But then I also just, this is all I need is, what did we say? 7 combined home runs out of Paredes and Cam Smith.
You said that's 9 all. Earlier. You've softened on that. You wanted 9 earlier in the show.
It's a 4-game series?
It's a 3-game series.
Yeah, oh, that's right. That's why we tweaked it. Okay, that's 7. That's all I asked. 7 home runs out of those
7
two.
Home runs
oh,
out of
oh, and Kyle Tucker to go over.
That's all you're asking for.
That's all I'm asking.
Okay, I don't think that's a
Can
big ask.
Can you give me this, Astros,
I don't think
please.
That's a big ask. Not sure if anybody knew this, but the NBA draft is tonight. I know people know this. I know the NBA draft. I used to love the NBA draft. Now it's just something on the calendar. I'm lukewarm on the NBA draft tonight, but this might get me to watch. I saw something on the internet last night, and you're going to hear it in a minute. This might get me to watch the NBA draft tonight. We will have that for you. I'm going to watch it, but we might get you to watch it. We'll have that for you coming up next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Live from the Mo Karam Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Okay, so the NBA shifts quickly from Game 7 in Oklahoma City on Sunday to the NBA draft tonight. So they're already doing hits on ESPN yesterday, live from the venue where the NBA draft is going to be held. And they had the entire desk up there. Malika Andrews sitting there hosting with Kendrick Perkins to her right, and then to her left were Jay Billis, who is a staple for the NBA draft because he's seen all these guys play collegiately, and then Shams Charania at the very end there. So the four of them are sitting there, and Kendrick Perkins, I will watch the NBA draft tonight, but admittedly, it's not nearly the event for me that it was even 5 or 10 years ago. It's just a lot of international guys, a lot of one-and-dones, and the Rockets, coincidentally, don't have a pick right now in the draft tonight, so locally, there's not a ton of reason, although there are rumors the Rockets are trying to trade back into the draft tonight, so we'll see what happens. But Kendrick Perkins, Cooper Flagg is the big name in this draft. Duke, one-and-done, freshman, All-American, best player in college basketball last year. Kendrick Perkins had this comp for 18-year-old Cooper Flagg yesterday.
This is how I look at Cooper Flagg. If LeBron James and Kevin Garnett had a baby, you get Cooper Flagg. And why I say that is because when you think about LeBron James, you think of a complete basketball player, right? Jay, you just ran off the stats. He led the team in everything. That's a LeBron James type thing. And you talked about his passion, his tenacity. I'm watching KG all over again, the way that he plays with a high level. We don't give players enough credit like Cooper Flagg. I think it's a skill to have a high motor like he has it. Mm-hmm. And you talk about his competitive nature and saying this is one of the most competitive guys over the last 20 years. It is, because most guys in high school nowadays, they reclass and go the other way.
Right.
He reclassed up. So he's running up the chimney looking for the smoke. And I love everything about this young man. I love how humble he is. I love how low maintenance he is and how hard working he is. And he's a generational talent.
That is 55 beautiful seconds of audio right there. I like some of the points that he made. The funniest one for me, Seth, I don't think guys who have high motors get enough credit. Yeah. So I'm going to proceed to make up for all that credit they haven't gotten by comparing Cooper Flagg to LeBron James and Kevin Garnett. If they had a baby.
I always like the problem with the high motor stuff is always that it's usually the really great players. Yeah, they also have high motors. It's like, you know, James Harden is the exception, not the rule. The guys that just are flat out just machines all over the place. Yeah, those tend to be the superstar players. So when you bring up a high motor, it almost feels like a pat on the head,
yeah,
more so than anything else, which is in and of itself disrespectful. He's clamoring for more disrespect,
yes,
for Cooper Flagg.
Yeah. You should have seen the looks on the faces of Jay Billis and Shams. Jay Billis especially, because I'm guessing Jay Billis looks at these guys that are on the set there that are just strictly NBA guys.
Yeah.
And he's probably like, man, I watch these guys all the time play. Like, I know what the comps are for, especially Cooper Flagg. Jay Billis went to Duke, so he probably has been on the Cooper Flagg train since before he even set foot on campus. I feel like it's that way a little bit, like, with the NCAA tournament when Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith are doing the studio show with, yeah, Clark Kellogg, who does college basketball all year. And he's probably, Clark Kellogg's probably like having to like hold a sneeze in to not correct them on things and stuff like that. But Jay Billis had a look on his face when Perk dropped, if LeBron James and Kevin Garnett had a baby, it would be Cooper Flagg.
Billis is
like, are you nuts? it was awesome.
He's most often compared to Tatum, Pippen, and Kawhi.
Yeah.
That's the, you know, so some blend of those three.
Yeah.
Would have gotten fewer clicks, though, because other people have said that.
You got to say LeBron James. You got to stick LeBron's name in it.
The best thing to do is compare somebody to the all-time great.
Yes.
That's the fairest thing you can do to the kid, too.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, great. Now we're going to have debate shows for the first 3 weeks of his career, you know, comparing to him. Like, is he as good as Michael Jordan yet? No, not yet.
You know,
it's
one thing to bring up multiple names too, because
LeBron.
Yeah, yeah, the bring up multiple names like Tatum and Pippen and who was the other one? Kawhi. You brought up there. That I'm guessing you looked up on a website there. That's an or. You know, like, he looks like either, you know, Jason Tatum or Pippen or Kawhi. Like, to say that this guy is a combination of these two guys, like,
yeah,
he is both of these men, Kevin Garnett. So I say all this to say that if Kendrick Perkins is indeed sitting in that analyst chair tonight for the NBA draft, I mean, we could have some this could be a take-a-mania treasure trove happening tonight at the NBA draft with Perk up there talking about things. Mm-hmm. So that's got me. That's good job, ESPN. You sucked me in. I'll be watching tonight. As long as Perk is on the desk, I'll be watching.
What are you hoping for the Rockets if they do trade back into the first round?
A shooter.
Yeah.
A shooter. Yeah, just somebody. I don't know that they're trading for anybody who's getting on the floor this year. So if their scouting staff, Seth, you know, and they've got enough first round draft capital and future drafts to move back in if they want to. If their scouting staff and Raphael Stone see a guy that they feel like is worth stashing for a couple of years, then I'll trust them on that. There's no GM or staff in town that's engendered more trust right now than Raphael Stone and the Rockets. I mean, I can't think of a bad decision that they've made in the last couple of years, in the last few drafts. So
some version of a Reed Shepherd type of dude or something.
Yeah, yeah. Just a hired gun, that kind of thing. Just someone who's a sniper. Payne and Pendergast with you, 713-572-4610. Hey, I don't know if I can't remember if I sent this to you. Did you see the video? It didn't happen in real time. The aftermath got a lot of run, though, of the guy who jumped from the second level of the Galleria down to the ice rink.
I didn't need you to send me something that I'd seen like 400 times.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know if you'd seen it. Okay. Yeah, yeah. That was wild, man. That was...
The biggest thing I question I have, I guess, even though I saw it like 500 times on my timeline or elsewhere, I didn't really like try to zoom in on the details of it. So just go ahead and lay the story out for those of you who don't
know. Well, yeah, for those who don't know, this happened over the weekend. There was a guy in the Galleria who, it turns out, shoplifted a pair of glasses, because the security video surfaced yesterday of him picking the glasses off the shelf and then getting on his own phone and talking about it.
Yeah.
And then ultimately
did they have evidence? Like, did he like live?
He's wearing the glasses in the video. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see. I saw the aftermath. I didn't see that part.
Yeah.
Of it.
Okay. So he got chased by, I'm assuming, a couple mall cops in the Galleria.
yeah.
and decided that the great escape would be to jump from the second level of the Galleria down to the ice rink in the lower level of the Galleria.
Yeah.
And the aftermath is, I mean, I'll say it's funny because I don't feel sorry for this guy. You know,
he's like, laying on the ground and it looks like,
he looks paralyzed.
He has two broken legs.
Yeah.
And it just does not look great. Except, though, it does also look like he's on his phone, does it not?
Yeah. He's still on his phone as he's laying there. He's probably calling 911 or something.
He's still on the phone. I just can't imagine a worse surface to jump onto than an ice rink.
Yes.
From any kind of, because there's, there's no possibility of a tuck and roll. You know, no. In your mind, you've got every Netflix series you've ever watched in your mind and how you're gonna land and tumble and then you'll be scot-free to the races.
Yeah.
Off to freedom. No, your legs are gonna split and you're gonna hit your tailbone or your shin or femur or something. Oh.
There's people filming him as he's laid out on the ice. Yeah. His legs aren't moving. Like, he looks paralyzed. And I think the report is that he did end up breaking his legs or whatever. This is where Twitter is at its best, in my opinion. The two funniest tweets that I saw about this, like retweets, comment tweets about this, someone said, dude laying down there like Andy just walked into the room. That's a Toy Story reference for those who don't know. He did.
He just like, wait, maybe if I just, I probably, I just got to keep him from picking up the scent.
Yeah.
After I made that brilliant jump, now I just got to lay still.
Yeah, yeah, maybe they won't notice me laying in the middle of the ice. The other funny one, Astros reporting that this Galleria shopper is suffering from leg discomfort. That was pretty good.
Thank you, though, by the way. I didn't get the Andy reference. I didn't know what that was all about.
That's Toy Story, yeah.
I've never seen Toy Story.
Yeah, Toy Story.
The
toys would all be sitting there doing their thing. Andy was the one little boy who owned all the toys. And when Andy was off at school, they'd be doing their thing. But as soon as Andy opened the door to the room and came home, they'd all flop down and play dead because Andy's not allowed to know that they've got
their lives.
I've seen that part.
I've seen parts of Toy Story. I know who Buzz Lightyear?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know who Buzz Lightyear is.
Woody?
That's about it.
You don't know Woody?
Woody is Tom Hanks' character.
Yes,
right?
He's a cowboy.
The cowboy.
Yeah.
Are there any other notable characters in that?
There's other notable characters if you've seen. Like, those are the two most famous ones. If you go to Disney, those will be the two standing there in Futureland or whatever.
Is there a sexy rabbit that you're oddly attracted to?
No, there's not a.
Oh, that's Jessica Rabbit.
There's a cowgirl significant other that Woody ends up with named Jessie. Yeah, named Jessie.
Jessie?
Yeah. Yeah, Jessie.
Is she pure and good, or is she a trollop?
No, she's pure and good. And she's a little rowdy, too. So, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, she's got an edge to her.
Rowdy in an annoying way, like those women on Yellowstone. What are they called? The rodeo ones.
Oh, like the ones that work on the ranch right there?
They're just hanging around for a couple of seasons really annoyingly. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't find all of them to be annoying. Jessie's on the non-annoying side, I think. I don't know. Weigh in, text page. How annoying is Jessie from Toy Story?
Not the actual cowgirl, but like the good-looking ones that are just there as like groupies for the, cowhands.
She's not that. No, she like legit carries a rope around with her and stuff like that. She's legit. What's the maximum height that you would jump down to an ice rink to avoid a situation?
To an ice rink?
Yes.
Oh, okay. God, especially if it's just shoplifting. And let's say for the sake of argument, that it was my first offense, which I'm guessing it is not for this guy. if it were my first offense and it were for shoplifting, I'm guessing I would just go ahead.
Give yourself up.
I'll put that on my permanent record. I wouldn't jump. Let me look. I'm looking at, I don't know if I'd jump 3 feet onto ice in sneakers.
Yeah, because you could slip. Okay, there's grass below. Okay.
Yeah.
What's the furthest you would jump down to, like a
second
yard?
Second story.
You think you'd be okay?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if I'd be okay, but I would take the chance.
You would. Okay.
Yeah, second story for sure. Third story, no way in hell.
Now,
second story, you can kind of lower yourself down enough that it's only, you know, it's not, doesn't necessarily have to. But if I'm doing a running jump, that I could, with the right mix of fear and adrenaline, 100% I could see myself jumping off of a second story. But third story, I would just like, you know what? I've led a good life.
Yeah, I would say second story would be a situation that this guy was in, or if I'm about to get tased, definitely second story. I feel like whatever pain I get down there could be less than a bad tasing. I would jump like half a story to avoid a conversation with somebody I don't want to talk to. Like, I would jump a good eight or nine feet to avoid talking to somebody I don't want to talk to. Yeah.
The hard one to pull that off, though, but if you can do it, it's 100%, is you got to act like you're talking on the phone the whole time.
Yeah, I got to go.
No, you're actually on a phone conversation.
Yeah.
And you have to, like, you know, turn your head as you're jumping so they can't see that there's actually nobody on the phone.
Yeah. I would, like, if the building I were in were actually burning or something, I would give it a shot at three stories or four stories, I think.
Kids, by the way, that's one of the best things about getting a little bit older is you'll reach a time in your life where when you see another person, another middle-aged person walking through the grocery store, that maybe, you know, maybe you genuinely both like each other, but you're not close friends. You just nod. Yeah, there's no need for a conversation or something. Right. You kind of have a look where you're like, yeah, we both know the deal. I'm just trying to get out of here ASAP, you know?
It's a skill you learn.
You don't have to pretend to like pretend you didn't see him and try to avoid him or anything.
Buckle bunny is the correct term for rodeo groupies, is what the text page is saying. Buckle bunnies.
That's the term, but it's something that they do at the rodeo, and I can't think of the name.
I apologize. Woody's significant other was Little Bo Peep. Buzz Lightyear's significant other is Jesse. So Buzz Lightyear. Colin, do you have a correction on this here?
That's right. Little Bo Peep, Jessie's the female opposite of Woody.
Right. Cowgirl, but she dates Buzz Lightyear.
Yes. Yeah, that's where I got it wrong.
Yeah.
Seth, I'm surprised you've never seen Toy Story. I just have to, you know, point that out. I'm surprised.
Yeah, it's all right. Like, it's more forgivable than Sean not having seen as some of the really important
Riverdance
sports movies.
Yeah.
The barrel racers. Those are the annoying women in Yellowstone.
Okay. I actually like the barrel racing event, though, at the rodeo. I'm pretty good at, like, getting within a tenth of a second. Yeah.
Because you don't have to get to know them and see that their personalities are apparently, like, it's a bad advertisement on Yellowstone.
Yeah.
I got to believe that most barrel racers are not like those women.
Yeah. The people are pointing out you're talking about the barrel racers. Yes.
Thank you.
Yep. You
got
backup
like
on that.
I got four texts on my phone, too.
You got backup
on
that.
More of you people like Yellowstone than I would like to.
I liked it until I didn't. You know,
until it became C-SPAN.
Yes,
Montana.
I liked Yellowstone a lot until I stopped liking it. Yeah,
there was all in the whole thing too. There's a danger in any movie where they did a really good job of painting Beth as a complicated character who is like, that was cool and all, but I just so despised her by the time I quit watching. Yep. I just couldn't watch any more Beth.
I'm with you. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, the Astros. This is a big week for the Astros. One thing that once this week is over should have you very, very excited about this team, and we will tell you what that is coming up next.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Live from the Moat Caram Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Here was Joe Espada after last night's 1-0 win over the Philadelphia Phillies, talking about how this week, when you combine the Philly series the next couple days and the Cubs series this weekend, this is a measuring stick week for the Astros.
I don't think we gauge in anything. We are getting ready to play whoever we play. It's exciting when first place teams come in here. You feel the fan. You feel like it's kind of a playoff atmosphere. But we just getting to play whoever.
Yeah. So it's the Phillies. The Athletic came out with their power rankings this week, and the Astros are as high as they've been all year. They were seventh in the Athletic power rankings. Seth, the two teams they're playing this week are both ahead of them. The Phillies are, according to the Athletic, obviously subjective, the second best team in baseball right now, behind only the Los Angeles Dodgers. And then the Cubs are the sixth best team. The power rankings go like this. The Dodgers 1, Phillies 2. The Detroit Tigers, who have the best record far and away right now in the American League, are 3. Then the Yankees at 4, the Mets at 5. The Mets are in a tailspin right now. And then the Cubs at 6. And then there sit the Houston Astros at 7. After this, I know they play the Dodgers next week. They play the Rockies, the worst team in the rankings, and the Dodgers, the best team in the rankings. After that, the rest of the season, and I'm talking like all the way through, it's really just they got a series against Detroit. They got a couple series against the Yankees. And then other than that, it is all teams that are bottom half of the league for the most part. Like this is a this is the tough part of the Astros schedule. Like when I say part, I mean like chunks, like 10, 15 games, not individual series, is in the rearview mirror right now. Like the schedule lays out really, really nicely for them moving forward.
Yeah, even with the tough challenges in the next couple weeks, they still have the easiest schedule remaining in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
And if you can put in a good showing here, it's going to have to – yeah, it's essential to have a good showing here because whether it's – if it's good, you feel good about it regardless. If it's bad – then there's nothing they can do in the second half of the season, aside from if they really start tearing the cover off the ball as a group, not just Yordan Alvarez. It's going to be hard to not remember these couple of series versus the Phillies and the Dodgers without really feeling like you got a genuinely good and solid foundation.
In the Dodgers, I'll throw the Cubs in there too. Like the Cubs, these series, these series, but they play the Dodgers next week. I like the like three of the next four series are against top six teams in baseball. If they don't perform well over those, I guess it'll be nine games against those three teams, then the things we'll be saying in October, if they were to run up against those teams, and they would only run up against those three teams if it were the World Series. So obviously you'd be playing with some confidence already.
Yeah, we wouldn't be having that conversation anymore by that point.
Maybe. But if like if they got swept by, you know, like let's say the Cubs sweep them or the Dodgers, if they're unconvincing against the Dodgers, then what we will be saying is, well, we didn't have Yordan for those games, you know, or that the schedule lined up where only Hunter pitched one game, but the other two games were pitched by the, you know, the Gusto Gordon Walter trio there, that kind of thing, you know.
And the fun thing is they might see Shohei Ohtani, old friend, in the Dodgers series as he starts to pitch again.
Yeah.
So
I hadn't thought about that. I don't like Shohei. He screwed me on a Prize Picks lineup this weekend.
Oh, really?
I got four out of five. The only one I needed Shohei to hit a home run, he didn't, and then he hit one the next day.
You think the interpreter is pulling the strings from behind the bars?
Maybe. He probably had no on Shohei hitting a home run. Yeah. I haven't thought about that. As I hit send on my lineup, I should have thought of that. I'm like, Shohei would be so proud. But you know who would be even prouder? Ipe Mizuhara, his interpreter. Yeah.
Currently incarcerated.
Yep, as of last week. So, yeah, so the Astros... If you look at the power rankings in the Athletic, the average ranking of the teams they play the rest of the season, and this includes the Yankees and the Dodgers after this week, is around 18th, which the 18th ranked team happens to be the Guardians. So the Astros are basically playing the Guardians the rest of the season. You know, a team at that caliber. So yeah, that should have people excited about things moving forward. But in the meantime, eat what's on our plate this week. Colton Gordon and Zach Wheeler tonight over at Minute Maid Park. The barrel racers are getting a lot of love right now, Seth, on the on the text page.
My least favorite characters on Yellowstone. And I made sure to point out, I'm not talking about barrel racers, the actual barrel racers.
Right.
The characters on Yellowstone were annoying as hell.
Apparently the actual barrel racers, and maybe the ones on Yellowstone, they're crazy. But it translates well in terms of intimacy.
Well, I would imagine they're kind of crazy. Yeah, I could see where they came up with the character for the barrel racers. Because, you could envision them having personalities like that. But just a risk-taking mentality.
Yeah. So that's they're getting a lot of love. They're called barrel racers. They're all crazy. That's from Brent in the Heights.
So they are genuinely crazy? Okay.
I guess.
Now I got to look into barrel racing.
Yeah.
More so than just watching it once a year.
Yeah. I like it. It's an underrated event at the rodeo. 1923, the Yellowstone prequel is getting some love as well. People agreeing with your assessment of Yellowstone, but 1923.
I have a hard time with any of those series now by who's the guy that creates all of them?
Oh, Taylor Sheridan, I think.
Taylor Sheridan. Yeah. It felt like he went into streamlining formulaic mode too much. So they all feel like the same shows to me.
Yeah.
I can't. I'm just like, they took the same show and they put it in a different setting, and then here you go. I think they're If there were only one of each of those series, because what was the original one? 1870, whatever it was.
1887 or 1870.
I've never wanted the main character who is supposed to be the hero to die more quickly than I did her.
Yeah,
I was so happy when she died.
Yeah,
and I was so happy that her father was through with the burden of being her father.
That was
well.
Tim McGraw who played her father. Yeah,
yeah, I felt happy for Tim McGraw that he was done with this burden of a daughter who couldn't even not be a pain in the ass. When she died, she was an inconvenience.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
She was a mess. So that's, it was 18 something. I know 1923 is the one with Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
He plays one of the Duttons on there. People weighing in on the Astros. Last night included the last two Astro games I've been to. We've scored a total of 3 runs. The Astros are 2-0 in those games. It's just that kind of year. That's true. You can go to an Astros game and there's no offense going on, but there's a decent chance you're walking out with a victory.
Yeah.
I think they've gotten better. Remember that stat earlier in the year? I think when they were like, 50 games in, it felt like 30 of the 50-some-odd games they played, they'd scored 3 or less runs. I was tracking it much closer at the beginning of the year. It feels a little better now. It feels like they're having at least a few more capable offensive performances now than early in the year.
It's too far out to really just think about which guys they might trade for. If they trade for a lefty before the trade deadline, what are you going to do? So much of the actual – like the real hope for – a more solid base is obviously the pitchers, in which pitchers can come back and be healthy and effective.
Yeah.
And then Yordan Alvarez on the offensive side of things. But we still have to wait and see exactly what Yordan Alvarez looks like when he comes back. And it's just such a weirdly long stretch of him being ineffective that if it was simply that he had some kind of hand issue the entire time, I'd feel better about that, but I still have to actually see it when he comes back.
If this hand issue with Yordan lingers into July and into the All-Star break, and you come back from the All-Star break, and that's really when the trade deadline thing starts churning, if they're one of these teams that is actively out there looking for not just a left-handed bat off the bench, but like a decent left-handed bat that feels like an everyday guy, that probably tells me that the Yordan thing is either something where he's still going to be out for a while or they're nervous there's going to be a reoccurrence of it. Because I think if you look, it's easy to say, well, they need a left-handed bat. They're a very righty-heavy lineup. But I look at the lineup, I go, okay, well, once Yordan is back, where do you put the guy? Because Yordan and Altuve are going to kind of split the left field DH duties. Your catcher, Yiner's not hitting great right now, but your catcher platoon is Yiner and Victor Caratini. And then you go around the infield, you're not benching Paredes, you're not benching Pena. I guess second base, Dubon still needs to keep hitting, but that's a very specific left-handed bat to go get, a left-handed bat that can play second base. I don't think Christian Walker's getting benched just based on what he's getting paid. Yeah. And then your outfield has kind of solidified itself. As I said, left field, once Yordan's back, is going to be some combo of him and Altuve. Jake Meyers has established himself, at least in 2025, as an everyday center fielder that you can put out there and not feel bad about. And I don't want to see them benching Cam Smith right now. I want Cam Smith to be playing every day. So we sit here and just say, well, they need a left-handed bat, and that's great. And they do. They need more lefties. But I think this is just the position they put themselves in.
Yeah.
They put together a roster that was righty-heavy, and they were relying heavily on Yordan Alvarez, and he's hurt.
So Yordan, as we await the news that he swung off a tee on Sunday, he was supposed to be in the batting cage yesterday. So now we just await any kind of news about him feeling good or just still, I don't know. There's no news. We don't know. Espada didn't say whether or not there'd be a minor league assignment.
Right.
We have very little information other than that he is at least progressed to the level of a 4-year-old and he is hitting balls off a bat.
Yeah, Espada has said a couple times that they don't think there'll be a rehab stint for Yordan, that it'll be straight back to the major league roster. I can promise you whatever he gets asked today about it, Espada, that the answer will be he's feeling good. That will be the answer for sure. Now, to what degree they say the hand is healed, but they'll never say, well, the guy's, he's been feeling good this whole time, and yet he's been out for, almost 2 months now.
If Yordan plays in Sugar Land, you and I have to go take that in.
Oh,
If we can get tickets.
And sit on the grass so we can chase home run balls around, so we can shove little kids out of the way to get home run balls. I like that.
I'm gonna go. I'd rather just steal a ball from a little kid. That's a lot easier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or I'll make.
I want to go viral, Sean. Yeah. So I'm gonna steal a ball from a little kid in choke my local ballpark.
Choke slamming a little kid into the fountains. Yeah.
Oh, no. Let's not bring violence into it. But yes, I'll strong arm him.
Just stealing the ball. I got you. All right, more people weighing in on the KD.
Never be dumb enough to do that on camera. What you suggested.
Right, yeah. Right. And there's never any cameras around either, so that'll be fine. More people weighing in on the KD trade. People big, people national are weighing in. It's hard to find a dissenting opinion on this thing right now. We'll hear from a couple more folks weighing in on Kevin Durant coming up next.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.